on web snappers.
My spider sense is tingling.
Spider sense tells me I'm in for some trouble.
Anybody else's spider sense tingling?
Welcome to Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast where we dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made. I'm Doug.
And I'm Derek.
And is your spider sense tingling?
Nothing to do but swing and dig it.
We'd like to take a quick moment, of course, to thank our spectacular patrons, Bo, Carl, Katie, Jason, Zoe, James, Keith, and Cody.
Thank you
very much. And we are still talking the 60s cartoon, and that means, of course, we have a guest with us, and we are very excited to welcome the author of two-time Webby Award-winning comic strip Effin' Birds and the book Effin' Birds, A Field Guide to Identification, Aaron Reynolds. How's it going, Aaron?
What's going on? I'm outside in the cold. If you hear a dog barking, that's what's happening here.
Yeah, and we are so appreciative you are braving the elements for us.
It's truly
you know
suffering
what?
For the
There was a room in my house that was really quiet for podcast recording, and then I stopped doing that as my day job, and then that room became something else, and now there are a bunch of video games happening in there. So
fantastic.
I'm relegated to the back porch.
Amazing. If folks aren't familiar with you or Effin' Birds, tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. Effin' Birds is a daily comic that I've been doing for 7 years now, which seems really weird. It's creeping up on being the longest job I've ever had, you know, consecutively. And it's a daily comic where I pair up all of my frustrations with life with beautiful bird artwork. It is my personal therapy, and it found a very large audience, which is great. You know, I like that I can have horrible negative feelings and then make money from them. It's just the healthiest way to live, you know?
That's great.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. There on several occasions have been times where coworkers have sent your Effin' Birds images to each other on particularly rough days. So firsthand, I very much appreciate what you do.
I'm here for you. I'm here for you, and I'm here for your coworkers.
Yeah, yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Well, we're obviously talking about Spider-Man today, and and you're on this episode for a very particular reason, I think, because I know that you have a history with Spider-Man and this show. So tell us about it. What's your general history with the character in this show?
Well, I mean, I love Spider-Man. I was a big reader of Spider-Man comics growing up. I had a relatively extensive like collection of physical comics, but I also watched a ton of 60s Spider-Man on TV. And I also watched a lot of Rocket Robin Hood. Rocket Robin Hood was one of my favorite cartoons of all time. It would run like 4 or 5 times a day on City TV, which was like our independent station. And like, it was always on, and I always enjoyed it. And I would make my little, like, for people who haven't seen Rocket Robin Hood, it's Robin Hood, but in space. They have electro quarter staffs that they also can fly around with because they have little rockets on the bottom of them. So I would take my little Lego guys that were like Lego castle guys, and then I would give them sticks in their hand, and then I would put little red studs, those red, you know, semi-transparent studs on the end of the sticks, and I'd have Rocket Robin Hood. And so we would build Rocket Robin Hood Lego like crazy in my house. So I love Rocket Robin Hood, and it's gonna be relevant for this episode. Am I gonna spoil this, or are you guys gonna spoil this?
No, I mean, yeah, I think that it's like one of those things where if you generally know about this show, I think it's pretty common knowledge that this show reused a lot of footage and reused stuff from this show, Rocket Robin Hood. But I don't know that everyone, unless they're like really paying attention, realize like the extent to which that's done. Like, I watched the episode that this is pulling fun of Rocket Robin Hood, so I basically just watched this episode twice. It is really incredible how one-to-one it is.
There's actually a really beautiful compilation that somebody put on YouTube that's got a 15-minute stretch where they just run both of them side by side, and they're rarely out of sync by more than 5 seconds. It's just kind of amazing. And they just reused an entire Rocket Robin Hood episode. They took out Robin and they put in Spider-Man. And I don't know if they just had all the cells and they reshot the animation or what, but like, and I mean, I, so it, in the era of cheap cartoons for TV, like reusing animation cells, like was the most common thing in the world. I own a cell from the Star Trek animated series of Spock looking at his tricorder, and it is the most beat up. Like they've used it like 100 times because every time Spock looked at that tricorder, it was the same goddamn cell. So, you know, it's like, it's like the little holes for registration are all like worn out because they've used it so many times. Like, I love it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But this is a level deeper. This is like reusing a whole other cartoon to make a new cartoon.
Right. And I think the bizarreness of it is like, you wouldn't think of Rocket, Robin Hood, and Spider-Man as being anywhere in the same in the same sphere at all. Like what this episode is so far and away like not a Spider-Man story. Like it almost like that they, and I know that it was just because of that was the resources, right? Like Krantz Films owned Rocket, Robin Hood. Ralph Bakshi was working on it, so it like looks similar. Like it makes sense from the like corporate level, right? Like of being able to reuse it because they're literally all, they have access to it. But the fact that this is a show that is like this like fantastical science fiction show with like giant beetles on another planet, and then it's sort of like, well, I guess we'll just say Spider-Man's on an island that looks like another planet. Like it's just, it's, that's the absurdity of it is so funny. And of all the episodes of the show to pick too, it was interesting that this is one of them because this is also just an extremely weird sci-fi episode, you know.
It's quite glorious. I mean, I loved that. I know that they're just reusing different shots because they're not animating new things for this episode, but the way that they seem to like indicate the geography of the world is that, that this weird island is kind of near the Brooklyn Bridge. Like that's, I love that. I love that this weird island where this bug skull guy is enslaving an entire race of people to mine his like unobtainium for him. Like it's just, it's just out there. It's out there by the Brooklyn Bridge, you know, maybe like 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
Not far.
It's an, it's an island of people who are like space medieval for some reason, you know, like, which is just got, you just got to go with it. Just go.
Yeah. I wrote Cosmic Ren Fair. That's what I wrote on my notes. Cause that's what they were dressed like.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, the episode we are talking about, it's of the Spider-Man 1967 show, of course, season 2, episode 8, entitled Phantom from the Depths of Time.
If you wish to stay alive, you will be my slaves until every ounce of this precious lavicide is mine. Then you will make me the power of the universe. Put them to work, Igor.
Mayday! Mayday! Anyone, help! Calling anyone! Mayday!
What's my spider sense picking up? Some sort of distress signal coming from the direction of the open sea. The person calling must have a special transmitter so that only my spider senses can pick it up. Got to get there and help. No one else could possibly have intercepted that message. But how? How? I got it!
You think anyone will listen?
I don't think so. And even if they do, how would they find us and the thousands of islands in the sea?
Look, Dr. Manta. He's climbing into one of our robots. He's going inside the robot.
Those sonic impulses that operated these things were coming from that castle. That's where my man is. And I'm sure he has more surprises for me, so I better be careful.
The synopsis per IMDb is, one of the enslaved inhabitants from a small island manages to send a distress call on the same frequency as Spider-Man's spider-sense. He arrives to find the evil Dr. Mantra, that's not right, using giant beetles to force the humans to work in the ore mines. Well, I thought it was specifically lava side, not ore, but whatever. The original air date was November 2nd, 1968. And as we said, the episode of Rocket Robin Hood that this is riffing on is a season 3 episode called From Menace to Menace. I believe it's season 3, episode 11. If you want to look it up and watch it yourself. But I mean, if you've seen this episode, you've basically seen that episode.
You've seen them both. You know. I mean, I think it's a really fun exercise to compare the two of them. Yeah. But like, I think that especially when they've like solved problems of, you know, Spider-Man talks to himself a lot and I'm watching him like, why the hell is he talking to himself? Oh, there was another character here in the Rocket Robin Hood version. Got it.
Yeah.
It is impressive, especially when you say side by side, they're almost synced up. It's wildly impressive. As far as cheap cartoons go and the tricks you can pull off, this is one of the more impressive ones for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are introduced to a new villain here, Dr. Manta.
Dr. Manta.
Who's a bug guy? He's a bug guy. And he is voiced by Carl Banas. And Aaron, you said prior to our recording here that you have stories of Carl Banas. This is a voice you grew up with.
Oh, yeah. Well, Carl Banas, in addition to being, you know, in a bunch of cartoons like Rocket Robin Hood and Spider-Man, where like he's mm-hmm. he's always like these authority figures on Spider-Man, right? Like he's always like one of the cops or something like mm-hmm. that, you know, mm-hmm. men get Spider-Man. But he was the nighttime DJ. The whole time I was growing up, he was the nighttime DJ on Easy 97, which was our local easy listening channel in Toronto. And so Carl Banas's voice, when I hear Dr. Manta say things, I'm just like, he's about to introduce Smooth Operator. That's what I hear in my head. He's about to tell me that we're listening to Gino Vannelli. Like, that's
amazing.
Like, and so like his voice is very much entwined with that for me. But also, like, we all knew he was great because every year at Christmas, they would on, I think on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, I can't remember. It was a long ass time ago, but he would do a one man Christmas Carol. So do Dickens's A Christmas Carol, do like the whole, like tell the whole story, but also be all of the parts of the cast himself.
Oh my gosh.
And it was fantastic. I have a cassette of it somewhere in my parents' house. I mean, if they didn't sell it at a garage sale or give it away or something like that, but like they're hoarders the way I'm a hoarder. So I think they still yeah. have it. And I kind of want to go listen to it having watched this because I was thinking about like how great his Scrooge was and mm-hmm. like his scary ghosts. And I remember like we looked forward to it every Christmas.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that.
It's interesting the voices that he does. Like you said, he's usually voices of authority and stuff, and here he is, this bug guy. And I do kind of wonder, like, did he know what this guy looked like or what his whole deal was when he was recording? Because he's just like got this sort of like straightforward theatrical kind of delivery for this bug guy.
It's so funny. I love the performance, but it is like off-putting when you first watch it because it is not the voice you expect to come out
no,
of.
No, you don't expect that to come out of a bug guy. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I also like, I do like the writing and I don't like the writing, but I really like the writing when he gets his monologue at the end mm-hmm. about with Igor not being an appropriate audience for him. Like when he's like, he's like, oh, I'm my own best audience. You know, like that was mm-hmm. like this wonderful, like, weird villainous self-affirmation monologue that was just like, I love this. I want to treasure this and keep this in my heart all the time.
Yeah, it's great because in the first season we got a bunch of these made for the series villains, but they were all really straightforward. They had their like one gimmick and then you'd kind of never see them again. And then right. in the second season we're getting these new villains, but they've got a totally different flavor. They're like eccentric and over the top and really verbose. And that's totally fun in a totally different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting too. Well, one thing is like, I don't think that there's Dr. Manta appears in a couple episodes, I think, of Rocket Robin Hood. So like this episode, this is riffing on, isn't his first appearance in that cartoon. It is his first appearance in this cartoon. But I don't think that like that monologue that he gives to Igor, unless I just totally missed it, I don't think that that's in the Rocket Robin Hood episode that this is riffing on, which I found really weird because like, it stands out so much in this episode, you know,
right. mm-hmm.
unless they pulled it from a previous Dr. Manta episode or something. Cause this also doesn't sound like the type of thing that a character in this show would say either. So,
right. Right. But I think I'm pretty sure that the goal of this episode was don't record any new dialogue if you don't have to, and
right.
don't make any new animation cells if you don't have to. And so, yeah. You know, I think it must be from another one, but I don't.
Something.
Yeah. I mean, I remember Dr. Manta. I don't remember a lot of specifics of Rocket Robin Hood. And I think it should probably stay that way because I have such fond memories of it. And if I watch it, it's probably not that great. But I loved that this episode treated Dr. Manta like a guy we should totally know who he is. You know, explains nothing about why he keeps playing notes on his organ that activate giant robots. Or Dude. Like make the mountain come alive. Like, it's great.
Yeah. I think it's really funny that like many episodes this season have started with a narrator, often when there really doesn't need to be one. And of all episodes, this episode really needed a narrator. And yes. there is no narrator to be found. We are just thrown into this and just got to accept it, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. Oh. And Dr. Manta's plot is so nonsensical. Like, I sort of get it and I get the emotional beats of what he's doing, but I don't see the advantage to him of any of the things that he does in this episode. Like, I don't see how this pays off for him as a supervillain. I don't know how he's going to use that ore to control the universe, or why he thinks he can, or why he had to enslave people to do it when he has an army of goddamn robots at his command. Like,
seriously.
Yeah. It takes like some rewinding or watching once again to really sort of understand his beats. And even then, they don't really line up very well.
No. Yeah.
I love that this episode opens with Spider-Man swinging specifically so that you know it's a Spider-Man show, because it very quickly turns into what looks like not a Spider-Man show.
Right.
Completely goes to this other world with Dr. Manta and these bugs hatching from eggs, maybe. And then like attacking, like you said, this cosmic medieval sort of city, kidnapping people and taking them to a mine. And it's not an insignificant portion of the beginning of the episode, so they really had to make sure Spider-Man was in there from the jump.
Yeah. And to be clear, laser-eyed beetles, like beetles firing lasers out of their eyes, mm-hmm. giant beetles firing lasers out of their eyes, coolest shit in the world. Like,
yep, amazing. Oh, the first time one of them,
rad as
first,
hell.
Yeah, one of the first time I saw a laser beam come from an eye, I was like, oh yeah. Give me more of that.
Perfect.
I hope they reuse this shot 6 times in this episode, because I want to see it again and again. And they did.
They do. They certainly do. You mentioned this ore, this lava side. They never explain what it is, what it does.
They do in Rocket Robin Hood. That is one thing that they cut out of Rocket Robin Hood that is in here. And I think in Rocket Robin Hood, all it really is that it's just like, it is one of the most explosive materials in the universe.
Oh, so we could use it for so bombs much. And stuff.
That's why there's basically like a nuclear bomb that goes off at the end of the episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they completely do not include that. In this one at all.
I did accept that Spider-Man knew that the material would explode because he's a scientist. That's the only reason I accepted it.
Yeah, he can just know things, you know?
He can figure it out.
He also knows how to fly a rocket ship that he just found in the woods.
Yeah. This is wild. Uh-huh. Like, the intersection of the two shows is this distress signal that one of these maybe medieval, maybe cosmic guys sends out that, like the description says, somehow lines up exactly with Spider-Man's spider sense.
I love that they lampshaded too. Spider-Man's like, I don't know how they got my frequency, but I'm going to go help them. Like,
Yeah. The plane cracks me up, because there's a whole moment where he's like, I don't know how I'm going to get there. What am I going to do? And then he says, I've got it. Like, he's got a whole plan, and his plan is just steal a plane.
Yep.
It's great.
I love that you call it a plane and not just a full-ass rocket ship.
It like, is. What?
Well, it
he
is.
Calls it, he calls it a plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, are we going to reference the Fantastic Four here? Are you just going to say that you took this from Reed Richards? Because that I would buy. Except I don't think the Fantastic Four ever appeared in this cartoon. So
no, but that would be fantastic. I would love that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that ship, I would buy that as a thing that the Fantastic Four flew. It looks like the crap they flew in the Corman Fantastic Four. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? Totally. Honestly, I think that, I mean, I know Ralph Bakshi's like on the record that he just like didn't really care about like Marvel comics and lore and stuff. So I think
it shows.
Right. I think if someone was on staff, I think it would have been like, oh, easy. We'll just reference this other Marvel thing as long as they'd allow us. And I'm sure that they would at that point in time. So I think like literally no one on staff would even know to think about that. Cause it's like, I don't know what other characters exist. I don't know. We'll just make up a rocket ship. It's fine.
Yeah.
He does encounter all kinds of wild stuff when he arrives at the island. He's immediately confronted by those laser eye insects, which he somehow immediately recognizes as robots. He's just like, my hunch was right. They're robots. Great.
Well, they are firing lasers out of their eyes. It's a kind of a robot thing to do, to be fair.
Well, I mean, but it's on an island by the Brooklyn Bridge. I mean...
And no one in a superhero universe has shot lasers out of their eyes.
Fair.
But it's important because then he can hack into one of them and, like, I guess, redirect it to, ride it around and blow up all the other insect robots.
I made a note, and it says, my favorite kind of plan, just cause chaos. Because he says, I bet if I can get this under control, I can cause a real traffic jam. And it's like, oh, he's going to drive a robot into a bunch of other robots. I love this. That's like, there's this golden era of James Bond where frequently his plan is kick something over or knock some things down or smash something into something else. And it's like, my favorite is troll James Bond who does that. That's it starts in like the George Lazenby James Bond. His like his signature move in that film is that he's waiting for an automatic safe cracker device to crack the safe. And he's looking through the lawyer's magazines and he finds a Playboy and he decides to rip the centerfold out and put it in his pocket. And I was like, what kind of man does that? What kind of man does that? But like, you know, an agent of chaos, like a Spider-Man exactly, that would yeah. crash this robot into other robots, which I think is a great plan. Yeah. Oh, it is also beautiful. A good time to talk about. We once again heard my favorite thing that happens in Spider-Man because of the Canadian voice cast, which is Canadians of a certain age do not say robot. They say robot.
So that's where that comes from.
So yeah. We had Igor saying robot. It's my
See,
favorite.
This is what we need because so much of the DNA of this show is Canadian.
Yep.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when we talk about the voice actors, it's like, this seemed like it was a really big deal in Canada, but we don't know about it.
Yeah. Why do they say robot? It's like, yeah. have you ever heard that that outtake of William Shatner on the Star Trek animated series? And they're trying to get him to repronounce a word and he's refusing. It's my favorite.
No.
Because he says Spock, sabotage the computers. And the director comes in and says, can you try it again as a sabotage? And he says, you say sabotage. I say sabotage. And the finished
that's
episode
so funny.
He says sabotage.
Oh my
incredible.
God, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's like it. When you're a kid and you first are corrected on a word and you're like, no, that's how I say it though.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, William Shatner yelled at my children at a Comic-Con once, so I mean, I don't have a lot of warm William Shatner stories, but
sure,
he's you know, he's at a place where he's allowed to pronounce sabotage however the hell he wants.
Sure.
He's been to space.
Literally, yeah, actually. Yeah,
literally been to space.
Well, Spider-Man is able to figure out that the sonic impulse is controlling those robot ants, or not ants,
robot.
Whatever creatures these are, is coming from a castle. So he makes his way to the castle. He runs into a whole bunch of other creatures, the first of which is like this big rhino-like insect that somehow balances on only its two front feet. It has no other feet.
The whole time I was looking at it, I was like, is this just animated in a way that I don't see its hind legs? Is that what I'm seeing? Or does it really only have 2 feet in there at the front?
I couldn't tell either.
It only has two. I couldn't find any other feet.
I didn't see any
really
other feet.
It's weird. Because it's just such a, I mean, it's like a why? Like, it wouldn't be that much harder to add the 2 feet in the back.
Yeah. Maybe they misplaced those cells before doing this episode.
Maybe. Could be.
Yeah. Anybody know where the hind legs went? Nobody will notice.
Nope. Oh, well.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's a robot.
You know what I kept thinking of during this episode was the James Caan character in Elf when he's not worried about printing the book with one page missing so nobody knows how the dog gets home. Like, that's the guy who was in charge of this cartoon.
Yeah.
It's truly. It's like, look, we just got to get it done out the door. Who cares? Like, the kids are going to, it's a Spider-Man show. The kids are going to watch it regardless of what it shows. It's fine. That said, I love the pink rhino with the elephant trumpeting. That thing's cool. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
It looks cool as hell. Yeah. It's a fun design.
I love the gator corn, or the unigator, or whatever you want to call it. The alligator with a horn on its nose. Like, I love that thing.
I was waiting for them to call it anything because I was like, what are they going to call this thing? What animal are they going to compare this obvious like sea dragon unicorn thing to?
Right.
Amazing that it's just alligator.
Yeah. I was like, it's not a crocosaurus or like a rhinodile. Like, come on. There's so many names you could call this thing, you know?
Yeah. If you're going to make your own robot monsters, you may as well give them robot monster names.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how else do you sell the toys?
Bingo.
Yeah.
The other creature that he runs into here is something that Spider-Man calls a giant gargoyle bird. And if maybe like a month ago, we saw something like this and we were wondering, was this something they made for the show or did they borrow this from Rocket Robin Hood earlier than we expected? And indeed, at least part of the footage of this creature.
Except no.
No? It's in reverse?
Okay, here's the thing. Yeah, so in a few episodes ago, in The Menace from the Bottom of the Earth, and then I think it's repeated again at another point, they have like these blackbirds, and it almost looks like it's from Rocket Robin Hood or something, and then it appears in this episode, so you'd think that the sequence is from this Rocket Robin Hood episode, but no, if you watch that Rocket Robin Hood episode, they are not birds. When they say that they are gargoyles, they are literally like these like humanoid, like deep black demonic, like devil-looking dudes with abs that are like half naked, grab people and dragging them away. They do look like gargoyles, and they really swap them out for these birds that they previously used in an earlier Spider-Man episode.
What's hilarious is you see the gargoyle looking like naked man gargoyle for like a split second in this episode.
There was multiple of those in the, and I'm curious what the choice, like, I don't know. Did they just not like the look of like this like giant half naked man dragging Spider-Man through the sky? I don't know. Maybe. But it was just, yeah, it was so fascinating. Cause then they swap them out for birds that I would not call a gargoyle like in any way. It just looks like a bird.
No, they weren't menacing. They look kind of like, I mean, they looked like they were dumb. They looked like they were like not very, very not very good at their jobs. That's what they looked like.
If something could look not good at its job, it's that.
Yeah, exactly.
So then, wait. So do these not appear anywhere in Rocket Robin at all? These are totally Spider-Man.
I don't think
creations?
I haven't. I mean, I haven't. I have not gone through a deep watch through of every Rocket Robin Hood.
How
episodes,
dare you?
So I can't say for sure, but I can tell you that they're definitely not in this one.
Okay.
And I did briefly scrub through as many episodes as I could, like very quickly, to see if I could catch them. And I haven't run into them. So I think that these birds might have been a creation of the Spider-Man show that they put into the Rocket Robin Hood footage, which is really weird. Yeah.
Of all things.
Yeah.
Maybe they created it for that previous episode and this is just purely a recycled shot.
Maybe. Yeah.
I was just thinking about if we want to like get into rights untanglements and what came what. I was offered recently the opportunity, and this made me so happy, to license Rocket Robin Hood, like all of the intellectual property. If I wanted to go make a Rocket Robin Hood comic book or whatever I wanted to do, price was so reasonable, I was like, I mean, that's less than a car. It's less than I mean, it was about 30 grand. And I was like, oh boy, but can I make back the 30 grand? And does anyone love Rocket Robin Hood as much as I do? I'm not sure. And you know, I just like, but man, I would love to have the rights to Rocket Robin Hood.
Right?
And I mean, look, I know that I'm sure 99% of people on Earth don't know what Rockin' Robin Hood is, but the idea of like, what if Robin Hood, but in space in the future,
it's such a
banger idea regardless. Yeah.
And the whole thing with the electrified quarterstaffs that they fly on, like, that's just like, that's killer. You know, and I think that's why I liked it so much. But I think I liked it. And it was one of the things that I was remembering while I was watching this. I liked it because from minute to minute, you really don't know what's going to happen because it doesn't really have to make sense. And they don't have to explain it to you. They're just going to do a bunch of stuff and it's going to get more and more weird. And, you know, they're going to like take a relatively well-worn plot, which is somebody enslaves people to do their bidding, and then some, you know, so they get a message out and some hero comes to save them. They're going to take that, but then they're going to put rock monsters and stuff in it, you know, like it's,
right,
it's great.
Yeah. It's very good. It's very, very good. Also, it might almost be like to the benefit that not everybody remembers Rocket Robin Hood, because then you kind of can, you know, invent it or reinvent it in whatever way you want.
Yeah. Netflix, call me Netflix.
Yeah, you won't have too many angry nerds on the internet mad at you because you didn't do it the right way. Right, you know,
the lore of Rocket Robin Hood.
You know what? Here's the thing: if there are angry nerds on the internet who are going to be angry about it and tell me I'm doing it wrong, they're going to be like men of my age exactly. So I'm going to have so much in common with those guys that I'm just going to be able to like say, look, guys, I know what you want. I want that too. But guess what? This is what we can make some money on.
Right. You'll just have friends. The other people who know the show, you know?
Yeah. They're like, they all grew up watching whatever independent station had the rights to it after. It was on the CBC originally, but then it went into these endless reruns. And like I said, we were watching it on City, which was like the greatest. I mean, City TV is still around, and it's kind of a sad part of Toronto history that City TV has just been absorbed by a major network now, because it used to be this bizarre renegade station that did whatever the hell they wanted because they were all the way up at the top end of the dial. You know, they were,
were
channel like 82 for a while. And then they, then they later got all the way down to channel 57, which is where they were for most of my like TV watching time. But they would do things like, they'd be like, hey, for 3 hours on the weekend, we're going to open the, because they were in a, they were on Queen Street, which was like the hottest street in Toronto. And they like, they had roll up doors like a garage had, that they would just open their whole studio out onto the road. And then they would have a dance party for 3 hours that they would televise. They would do a live broadcast dance party with a DJ and like,
that's amazing.
There was some like big anniversary of the Electric Circus recently, and I was like, oh man, I had so many friends who were on that show, you know, like what a great show. But that was awesome. They would just, they would do stuff like that. They would like, they did the thing called Speaker's Corner, where you put a dollar in the box and you got 1 minute to say into the camera whatever you wanted. And if it was compelling, it would be on television.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That's where the Bare Naked Ladies came from. They squished into Speaker's Corner and they played a song. And it was like this huge, like it was this big moment for them. That was their launch pad to success.
Wow.
I
didn't know that either. Holy
City,
crap.
City was amazing. Like I love City TV. I love the history of City TV. I mean, I love that they would, you know, there would be a week where they would only run James Bond movies, you know, and they would, and that was the thing, is their primetime programming was movies, but it would be weird packages, and they would like be really clear that some of them were not good. You know, it would be 2 a.m. and Mark Daly, who was not only the nightly newscaster, but also the voice of City TV. And he had this deep, sonorous, beautiful voice. And he would usually say, you know, welcome to Late Great Movies. And he'd tell you a little bit about what you were about to see. But sometimes he would say, this one, I don't know if you should stay up, but if you want to.
I love the idea of this renegade station that just doesn't really care about a brand necessarily. Oh, yeah. Like it just is what they are.
They do what they want.
Because it could never happen. Like how would you even do that now? Do you know if there's been much in the way of like emerged preservation? Have people come out of the woodwork being like, oh my gosh, I taped this?
Well, there's,
or is
there's
it just all...
A lot of it's gone, but there's actually a really beautiful, started as a YouTube channel, and now it's a museum space called Retro Ontario, who've been trying to preserve stuff like that. And if you go on Retro Ontario's YouTube, you'll see things like, they would do a thing called Night Drive every once in a while to fill time, where they would literally put a camera on the back of a car and drive around downtown at like 3 a.m. and just put some music behind it. And it was just like this soothing, meditative, like, you know, let's watch some light trails as cars drive around.
Yeah.
God, I love that.
This is the art we need.
Right. Yeah. I love that stuff. They were great. And they were, you know, and they introduced me to so many good movies, but also so many terrible movies that I treasure. Like, that's where I saw Hard Ticket to Hawaii for the first time. And I'm just like, I don't know if you guys know Hard Ticket to Hawaii, but it's like, oh man. So there was this guy named Andy Sidaris. He was a Emmy winning television director. He revolutionized the way sports are covered on television. He was one of the originating directors of Monday Night Football. But his retirement was that he would go to Hawaii and make an action movie every summer with karate champions, soap opera stars, and Playboy playmates. And that was his
amazing
thing. And they would go like right to video or the drive-in or whatever else. Like he started late 70s. And then in the 90s, he just did like clockwork one a year because of home video. You know, people would buy his... They have titles like Fit to Kill and Return to Savage Beach, Guns, Guns, Guns. That's one of my favorites.
Guns, but, Guns, Guns.
Yeah, Guns,
is
Guns,
maybe
Guns.
The best movie title I've ever heard. Oh, yeah.
Hard Ticket to Hawaii has a theme song where a guy sings about the hard ticket to Hawaii. That's just like, it also has a murderous snake as a subplot. Like I can't recommend it enough. I love Andy Sidaris movies. Yeah. And I thought I had hallucinated it because I saw it like in the middle of the night and then I fell asleep during it. And I woke up the next day and I was like, was that real or was that a dream? And I spent like a couple of years tracking down a copy of it. And I finally found one and overpaid for my VHS copy. But then in the early 2000s, people sort of rediscovered his work. And now there's nice DVD box sets of all this stuff. It's great.
Oh, wow.
Somebody gave me a big coffee table book devoted to the cinema of Andy Sidaris, which I love.
Amazing.
Oh, man. That's so fun. I do love, like that is something that I feel like we're sort of just missing in culture is, like,
yeah.
that like, cause you're like, there are plenty of things that exist out there, like plenty of bad movies you could watch, but being like forced to watch it in the middle of the night, like yes. the lack of choice is yes. what makes yeah. it like, cause if I'm going to watch something in the middle of the night, I'm probably going to choose something good. If I don't have a choice and I have to watch whatever is playing on TV, just so many more things are opened up to you.
Infomercials or Hard Ticket to Hawaii. It was an easy choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of them exactly. had a banner right. that said it had nudity and violence right. in it. And I was like, oh, I'm taking that over the infomercials.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. yeah.
Well, so yeah. I have a friend, thanks to the magic of the internet, I'm yeah. Friends with Brett Kelly, the infamous director of Jurassic Shark. And he has some pretty great stories about, like, he tried to retire from filmmaking a couple of times. And what will happen is someone will discover something about one of his movies and make a YouTube video about it. And then the views on Tubi will go through the roof. And then Tubi will call him and say, hey, do you want to make another movie about this? We have this much money for you. And he's like, yep. Okay. I need a new roof. Let's go.
Wow.
Truly the dream. Like, yeah.
That's awesome. Oh, man.
That's so cool.
I'm going to end love up that, with man. So many things to seek out and watch after this. This is amazing.
Oh, yeah. well, you can, if you want to watch one of them that has me in the credits, you can watch Galaxy Warriors, which is his Women in Space prison movie on which I am an associate producer. Cheers.
All right. Nice.
That means I gave them money. That's what that means.
Sure.
But I was happy to do what? It yeah. because yeah. Women in yeah. Space prison. It's a great movie.
Yeah. There you go. Sounds rad.
Oh, and you know, to tie this back in, it has a stop motion rock creature at the end. So, you know.
Oh nice. Hell yeah. Oh,
I think you already sold Derek, but you just sold him three yeah, times as hard with a stop motion rock monster.
Stop motion anything. I'm there, man. Hell yeah.
Yeah. That was a beautiful a segue back into the episode, though, because this is about when we find out that Dr. Manta has programmed a mountain monster to destroy the Earth in case he is discovered. That's the best way I could piece together why he has a rock or a mountain monster.
Yeah. No, that's his plan.
If you don't want to be discovered, maybe don't like make your fortress on an island near like one of the most populated places in the
also, in maybe Earth. Don't make it a castle.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, yeah. The castle, it was super suspicious looking.
Yeah. Uh-huh. People would want to go to that castle and check it out.
Yeah. I mean, now that I think about it, like Spider-Man just kind of figures out that there's a supervillain behind all of this because he sees a castle that looks menacing.
True.
He's yeah. never met this guy before. He doesn't know, like nobody ever mentions that like there's someone, you know, in charge of these robots and monsters and stuff. He's just like, I know there's a guy and I'm going to get him. Like, of course there is. There's a creepy castle in the middle of the island.
He even comments on like, I don't know who this person is. They probably think they're special, but they're just another supervillain right. to me.
Right, right. It's so like funny.
He knows instantly.
Mm-hmm.
He also knows pretty instantly when he meets Dr. Manta that the organ is important. That it's yeah. not just like a weird habit that Dr. Manta has to like score his own life. He knows that he must destroy the organ. And I think that is so funny to me. It's yeah. hilarious. Yeah.
I love the dramatic, you know, organ notes whenever Dr. Manta says, well, we'll see how he deals with my robot beetles. Like, I just love it. It's like, it's very Phantom of the Opera-y, you know, like just yeah. make a pronouncement and play some minor chords.
Yeah. Why not do that? Right. Like it's a yeah. control for your robots, but also it makes you badass as hell.
That's why he's a phantom from the depths of time.
Oh my
God. Phantom of the Opera.
Right. Oh man. See, now what's going to happen here is that I'm going to spend the $30,000 specifically to make a Dr. Manta movie. That's what I'm going to do.
Look, that design is so killer. Like,
yeah,
it just any updated version of it, you don't have to really change that much. It's so fucking good. Like, I think he's a banger of a villain.
I want him to look like Frank Langella in the Hitmasters of the Universe movie.
Right.
That would be perfect. One of my favorite things to do with this 60s show is imagine how you could modernize and increase the longevity of these villains we never really see again. So if you do that, I will be number one in line to see one of these villains have a life beyond this show.
I mean, Sony, give us a call. Let's let's pitch a Dr. Manta movie. I mean, there's a Madam Web movie. So, I
oh
mean,
my gosh.
Could it be worse? No. Could it be better? Probably. Maybe.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Always. They're leaving room for things like that. It's actually quite kind.
Yeah. I could do it for 10% of the budget. Sony, call me. 10%. Mm-hmm. 10% of Madam Web's budget, and I'll make you a Dr. Manson movie.
I'm here for it. Absolutely. Well, he tries to destroy the organ. Manta says, it's not worth your time. You could never destroy my organ. And so Spider-Man says, I guess I'll destroy your mountain monster instead, and succeeds at that instead. That's obviously the easier task. He does it by stealing Dr. Manta's spaceship, which is full of lavaside, which we have now learned is one of the most explosive substances on the planet, flies it directly into the mountain and blows it up spectacularly, and somehow gets away from that explosion very quickly.
Well, sure. You know,
Web parachute.
Oh, I love a web parachute so much.
Love a web parachute. I do love the phrase, the organ cannot be stopped. It's indestructible. Because there's definitely, you know, you can definitely read that multiple ways.
Got layers.
You could caption so many things with that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely situations that I could say that in. But yeah, no, I do love that it's literally just like a hydrogen bomb going off in the middle of the pink water that they're out there with. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, if no one knew they were out there before, they certainly know now.
Right.
It's a bunch of people on the Brooklyn Bridge who are like, they're testing nuclear weapons on that little island over there.
Apparently, yeah.
Didn't know they were doing that in the Atlantic now.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about this sequence of him flying into the mountain man is that the ship is multiple ships. Like, they don't just take one ship and just fly it across the screen because they want to do cuts and stuff. Mm. They pull multiple ships that don't look anything alike. And that tickles me.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I forgot to mention it when we're talking about the two-legged rhino creature. That little silhouette running away from it is absolutely not Spider-Man. It totally has hair.
Not even
it totally
close.
Has hair.
Yeah.
I think I feel like there was something else where that happened. There were a couple moments where it's like very clear that it's a protagonist or a character from Rocket Robin Hood, but they're far enough away or they're silhouetted in such a way that you can make the argument.
There's a point too when I think if you're watching the spaceship, like the silhouettes look like there's clearly multiple people in the spaceship
when it's
I mean, you know, all things considered, it's pretty amazing.
I mean, first of all, I was watching that on a 10-inch TV. So first of all, I wouldn't see that. And second of all, you know, it's so much of the episode doesn't make sense that this is just one more thing that, you know, I don't think you can actually nitpick this show.
No,
absolutely not. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, it's just surreal. All right. I guess I got to take it.
That's the thing that's so fun about it. It's surreal. The art, especially in the background, is always beautiful. And the music is great. So it's just sort of like a weird artful experience.
It's beautiful to watch no matter what. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually really struck by that. I was not expecting it to be, because I remember season 2 and 3 being a lot worse. Because it's been a long time since I've watched a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I just was like, oh, this is actually really pretty and I'm really enjoying this. And I'm just like, I'm going to let these colors wash over me. I was also looking at them and thinking, wow, these colors would not show up well on broadcast TV. Like, that kind of red just would not have done okay over the air.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. In some ways, the show benefited from being made when it was, because the silhouette wasn't meant to be seen in HD. You know, these little details weren't meant to be seen in HD. But the art, like, that's almost, not almost, it's so much better now that you can really get a good look at it. All those paintings.
Yeah. I mean, when I was watching the Rocket Robin Hood episode, you know, it was just low quality on YouTube, probably ripped off of somebody's old VHS tape that they taped off of. And the colors do not pop in it, even though you're looking at the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I think like the sort of general feeling that we've gotten watching through the second season has been that, like, narratively it's not as strong as the first season, but visually it's like a cut above and like just unlike anything else other than Rocket Robin Hood.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating because it means that a new audience discovering it now, as long as they're getting some sort of high quality version of it, are kind of seeing it entirely differently than people who would have initially saw the second season and been like, what is happening? You know, I mean, pretty much every person we've had on to watch this show has commented on how gorgeous the backgrounds are and how cool it is that even though the sequences are long, they're like nice to look at and fun to listen to. So, you know, that's a fun thing to think about.
I think that there's a lot of art happening on shows like this, like just when people don't have to make it good, but they also don't have to make it bad. You know, they can take some pride in their work and they can do something nice. It's like, I love the story of the animators who were working on the Beatles TV series when they ended up getting tapped to do the Yellow Submarine movie, because the Yellow Submarine movie was a contractual fulfillment. Beatles didn't want to make a movie, but they had one movie left in their contract. They're like, well, what if we just get the guys who make our cartoons to make a cartoon movie? And the studio was like, yeah, it's, I mean, we want to sell soundtrack albums. So like, will you give us, you know, 8 new songs? And they're like, yeah, here's 8 B-sides. and like, they literally did that. Like, nice. I think there's only 1 or 2 songs that are on Yellow Submarine that are not from anywhere else. But they weren't on albums. And that was the key. Yeah. They were like, they were unused and whatever. They were B-sides that were lesser heard Beatles songs. And, and then like, given like this pile of weird songs and total creative freedom, as long as it's 90 minutes long and costs less than X dollars, they made art.
Yeah.
Like they made something really great because nobody was watching, so they could do whatever they wanted.
That's exactly what's happening with this show. Like, it's not being made under the watchful eye of Kevin Feige. It's not even being watched by Stan Lee, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think, you know, I think we've said it multiple times throughout recordings now, but it's like Ralph Bakshi has been very open about the fact that it's sort of like, I know this wasn't my best work, but like, we had like no money and I had room to just do whatever I wanted. So if I can experiment and do weird shit, I'm going to experiment and do weird shit.
Right.
And if I can't, then I won't, because I don't have the money for it. Like, so you kind of get, you know, you get weird things like this where it's like, they only did it to save budget because 90% of the episode was already animated, but it makes it something so weird and bizarre that it's kind of art in and of itself just because of that, you know?
So I was doing I hosted a panel at Fan Expo Denver last year. All the cities blend together. I was interviewing Kevin Altieri, who directed a lot of episodes of Batman the Animated Series. I was great animator. We were talking about his career and how he got to where he got. And part of it was he ended up working at Deke because he saw Inspector Gadget on TV. And he saw that they were taking all these influences from Astro Boy and that they were making something that looked good and had a real sense of style to it when they didn't have to. And he was like, yeah that's where I want to go work. I want to go work for those guys.
Yeah.
That totally
and that's
makes
how he
sense.
Ended up like on the Alf cartoon.
Yeah. Like, amazing. I mean, that I really truly believe that this show, having been run by probably 9 out of 10 other people, would have just been just horrible. Like it, you know, somebody who didn't see that opportunity that Bakshi does to experiment or do weird things with so few resources. I'm just convinced that we would have nothing to talk about necessarily. If
we just have Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to say shots fired.
I would say that for the 1981 solo Spider-Man show, I'm not a fan of that show.
Okay,
Amazing Friends, I do love Amazing Friends quite a lot. But I mean, it's not the most beautiful show to look at.
I will say,
though. That's
it's fun for very different reasons than animation and art and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Even if it's not good, it takes so much effort to make something like this. So, you know, it's the, you know, if I'm like poo-pooing a thing, I'm doing it with a lot of respect because, you know.
Yeah.
Look,
many things that we have watched on here is absolute dog shit. So like, I think we're all on the same page with that.
Yeah. And there are so many Spider-Man shows, like no matter what your opinion is, you've got an army behind you, whether you like it or you don't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this episode ends pretty abruptly and in a very funny way. He like Spider-Man goes back to where these enslaved people are and he kind of debriefs with them a little bit, probably for our benefit more than theirs. And then the guy that he's talking to is like, oh, my gosh, where did you come from? And for some reason, this reminds Spider-Man that he needs to bring the plane back. So he just doesn't answer the guy and he just like books it out of there. And the episode ends with him in the plane. Like, it just is over.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, I stole a plane. I should give it back.
They might notice that.
It is so funny to think, like, you know, I mean, we know the meta of why this episode exists, but, like, in universe, This episode establishing that this island exists not very far from New York. These people are just, I guess, unaware that is, are these people unaware that there's an outside world beyond their island of like medieval space people, or like, are they purposely hiding? Like the fact that they don't know where Spider-Man comes from means that they can't have that much interaction or attachment to the outside world. So like, I what's the story? What is the story of this island? Like in the universe of this show?
I thought they were going to Quantumania it or something, like make it a world that's at a remove from our world or something like that.
Sure.
But no, they didn't. It's just an island.
It's an island.
It's an island. Some weird stuff happens on that island.
Yeah. And the title is literally from Phantom from the Depths of Time. Like, why couldn't Spider-Man go into a time hole or something like that?
This is a weird future or something.
Yeah.
Also, it's just an island, and Dr. Manta is convinced that no one will find it because there are so many islands. But it is just an island. And it's not in a remote place. So that explanation is so funny. Well, they'll never find it. There's so many islands. There's like thousands of islands.
Is it one of the thousand islands? Is that the part of New York he's in?
Right. Oh, like, yeah, wonderful. There's many islands, including the island of Manhattan that you were very close to, apparently.
Very
like,
close to.
Maybe he just didn't pick well. Maybe he didn't pick his island well.
Yeah.
I mean, this episode's wild. Again, could have used a narrator to close all this up, all this out.
No.
But also, yeah, maybe it's better just not knowing.
I don't know that a narrator would make it better. I think a narrator would only make it worse.
That's not a bad point.
You can't explain it too much. There's something like rewarding about getting to wonder.
Because otherwise we get midichlorians, you know, like, don't explain it. Just like, let it
be. That's fair. Yeah. Because it doesn't make sense anyway. So why even try?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's fever dream. We do have a few faces the episode that we pull. Aaron, this is the thing we've done historically forever. Just faces that we like that exist in the episode.
Amazing.
Because obviously the best thing you can do on an audio medium is to describe things pictures that people can't see. But, you know, then they can go to our social media, our website, and see it, or subscribe to our Patreon and see those images there. a few things that I picked that I like. I really love the shot of Spidey popping his little head out of the water. I can't even explain why I like it so much. I think it's just a little drawing.
Looks like Apocalypse Now. Looks like
Martian. Oh, my God. That's what it is. Yeah. That's what it is. Yes. That's what it is. It's a reference that I just wasn't connecting the dots on what it was referencing in my head. That's
but
exactly
it's not
because
it's 10 years earlier.
Right.
Apocalypse Now is until 79. So maybe Francis Ford Coppola is referencing this episode in Apocalypse Now.
Watch this cartoon. It was like, that's a good idea. Put a pin in that. We're going to use that in one of my movies in a decade.
We have convinced ourselves that many prominent filmmakers of the present day were inspired by this show. So that's perfect.
Jordan Peele.
Based decided.
Yeah. Off of an episode about a cloud that was secretly the bad guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also, we didn't talk about Igor that much. I don't know how much there's to say about Igor because it's literally just Igor like Igor. But his face is so ridiculously detailed. Like every time they show it, like there's a lot of detail in the drawings of people's faces on this show many times. But like the fact that they draw like individual hairs of stubble on this guy and like all the blood vessels of his eyes, like it's really intense.
Yeah. They wanted to make sure you saw every wrinkle, every hair, all the texture of his lips.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody's getting paid by the hour who was drawing that.
clearly.
Yeah.
And then, of course, our boy, Dr. Manta. I mean, every other shot, his like character design changes, but it's good every time.
Mm-hmm.
Iconic every time. I love it every time they show him. Just can't get enough of this guy.
Can we make some Dr. Manta fan club t-shirts?
Please. Absolutely.
Just
absolutely.
Like with one with him with his hand out and pointing, like, you know, like a nice Dr. Manta fan club. Yes. A nice Cooper block kind of print. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be perfect. Yeah.
I love Dr. Manta. What a guy.
Yeah.
And he's the world's smoothest radio host, Dr. Manta.
Dr. Manta.
Seriously. I'd listen to Dr. Manta.
Now
Dr. Manta late
it.
Night radio. Sounds great to me, man.
He's so great. Yeah. He's so great. So very calming, you know? It's like, I didn't even like most of the music that played on that station. That was definitely my mom's station, but it was a great station to go to sleep listening to.
Yeah. I can't get the image of him DJing out of my head now. And I thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah. With the headphones on and the hands on the turntable. Yep.
Absolutely. Well,
call for fan art. Dr. Manta DJing. Hey, yes. I would love to see it. Would mm-hmm. love to see it.
DJ Manta. DJ Manta.
DJ Manta. Hell yeah.
I'm writing a note. I'm gonna do fan art of that.
Hell yeah.
DJ Manta. There's a part of my website where I make weird t-shirts that just are like mostly to entertain myself. Mm-hmm. And it's like this weird garbage part of my website. It's literally the collection is called Weird. And if you type weird into effandbirds.com, just find like the strangest stuff. But one of my favorites I just did, when's this episode going out?
It's about a month. So it's March 19th.
Great. I'm not going to spoil anything. Cool. I'm doing a panel at Fan Expo Vancouver this coming weekend. I do a panel at all these shows called Bootleg Safari, where we like dive into knockoff things. Me and a guest introduce each other to strange garbage. In Orlando a couple weeks ago, Mark Brooks, the Marvel cover artist, I gave him a Chinese Avengers advent calendar that was supposed to have little Lego minifigures in it. And boy, they were terrible. But yeah, I got him to open it live on stage, and we've all these little weird rubber men. It was great. But I started telling this story for a reason, and that reason was to do with the Vancouver show. Shirts. Okay. So I like to talk about terrible movies that are knockoffs of other movies. And I've fallen down this rabbit hole of this Italian director named Bruno Mattei, who made a film called Terminator 2 that is in 1989.
Got it.
Which, by the way, turns out to be mostly a remake of Aliens. He also
I have to watch it.
He made Jaws 5. Jaws 5, starring a Hulk Hogan impersonator, and he saved money by not shooting any shark footage, just lifting it from other movies without paying for them, and that's why the movie was unavailable in the United States for a very long time. But anyways, we're going to watch some clips from Robo War, which is what if Predator was a RoboCop?
Amazing.
So it's a RoboCop hunting guys in the jungle. And anyways, all that to say, there's a character who's really terrible in it called Papa Doc, who, like, when they first show him, they're doing the slides to introduce the team. And it's this guy, and I can't even describe. It's like a guy trying to look cool for his Facebook picture with a mm-hmm. pipe in his mouth and his Hawaiian shirt on and all this stuff. And anyways, he gets killed in the movie. Spoilers for Robo War. But I made a t-shirt with that picture from the slide of, like, him clamping his teeth on the pipe, and it says RIP Arthur Papa Doc Bray 1946 to 1988. That's on my website right now. So if you want some really stupid. So, I mean, if it comes to making like DJ Manta merchandise, yeah, I'm all in. Let's do this.
No, that's perfect. That please. From the little I've learned about City TV, I feel like you're keeping the spirit alive by making the art you want.
Yeah, exactly. The weird garbage that you want to make.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the kind of thing where it's like, if you get the reference, great. If you don't get the reference, it's so fucking weird that I would wear it anyway.
I am. I should talk to Retro Kid because there's this Canadian nostalgia brand company called Retro Kid, and they'll go out and license something weird, and then they'll make beautiful t-shirts of it. So they licensed like Bargain Heralds, which was our original mega dollar store. They got the Bargain Heralds logo, and they got Bargain Heralds t-shirts that I obviously bought one of those. They did a line of the Hostess munchies recently, and so Hostess potato chips had these mascots that were little demons that lived in your stomach and would only be satisfied if you ate Hostess potato chips. And so
it's nightmarish.
I have this shirt with these three little colorful demons that says the munchies on it, and whenever I wear it to a show in the United States, people are like, what is that? I was like, oh, they're potato chip mascots, don't worry about it.
Yeah,
everybody likes the shirt. Fine.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Oh my god.
Well, we are so thankful that you joined us. We have so many things to check out now, and I hope that everybody also checks them out, because it is quite a list of beautiful, beautiful pieces of art that I can't wait to check out. But if people want to check out your stuff, Aaron, where can they do that? Where should they do that? What kind of stuff should they be looking for?
You can find me on any social media platform, except for Twitter, because I finally quit it. But any other social media platform. Yeah, right? I mean, I was just like... It's a shit show. Anyways, my username on everything is effinbirds. You can go to effinbirds.com, effinbirds.com, and find, like, there's links to everything there, and my online store with all my weird garbage is there. You can see all my panels from previous comic cons at bootlegsafari.com. There's also a Bootleg Safari YouTube channel, but that has ads. So you should go to bootlegsafari.com where there are no ads, because I'm not getting any ad revenue from that. So why should you watch those ads?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's, and then I got a lot of appearances this year. I got something like 15 more Comic Cons that I'm doing this year, and that appearance schedule is all at fmbirds.com. If this is out in a month, I think I'll be doing Toronto Comic Con, Calgary Expo, Fan Expo Philadelphia, Fan Expo Cleveland. I think those are my next four.
Nice. Oh, Fan Expo Cleveland. Interesting.
Yeah.
One of us may live in Cleveland.
Oh. Well, let me know if you want to talk about weird bootleg merchandise on a stage at Fan Expo.
All right.
watch an episode or two of Bootleg Safari and see if it's your jam. And if you want to
Sounds
do that,
great.
Hit me up. You've got my email address.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, if you would like to find Derek and me, you can do that all over the place. The first place we direct you is our Patreon at patreon.com/wallopingwebsnappers, where we do our weird stuff that doesn't necessarily fit onto the Spider-Man main feed. And of course, check out our Discord. There's a link in the show notes where you can talk about all of that weird stuff. You can find us individually all over the place. Derek, where can people find you and the things you are working on?
Sure. I still am, unfortunately, most active on Twitter at Derek E. Gale, but I'm on other platforms under that name, or Dare Bear, Mr. Dare Bear. You can also find my podcast, Gimmicks, where my co-host David and I look at the high concept, experimental, and structure-breaking, gimmicky episodes of television. I have a podcast that I do with my co-host Tommy called Lee Carvalho's Potting Challenge, a Simpsons gaming podcast where we're going through all these Simpsons tie-in video games chronologically.
Good Lord.
And oh boy,
it's fantastic.
It's rough.
It's rough for you. It's fantastic for us listening to it.
Not finishing many or most of those games. That's what Let's Plays are for. But you can find those anywhere in your podcast. And I also have a Twitch at Mr. Dare Bear, where I'll stream VHS recordings of old television airings with the original commercials. What about you, Doug?
Yeah, you can find me all over the place at Icky Booley, I-C-K-Y-B-O-O-L-E-Y. You can also listen to me on a podcast called Novel Gaming, where my co-host Katie and I catch up on all the books, video games, and sometimes other media we've been consuming lately. A couple weeks back, we played Disco Elysium and talked about that, and we should have a book club episode coming up in a couple days. If you'd like to find other queer creators who talk about media, check out the Glitterjaw Queer Podcasting Collective at glitterjaw.com. That includes Derek and my new monthly podcast, Screonk, a Godzilla movie marathon. We are stomping through Godzilla's filmography. We are in the middle of Mothra March, so you can find our episode on the original Mothra with guest Hamish Steele out now. And Mothra vs. Godzilla is coming out next week. I'm very excited because I know nothing about Mothra, so this is my first exposure to Mother Mothra.
Hell yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm a huge Terror of Mechagodzilla fan, and so whenever you get to it, just take the time to luxuriate in and enjoy the I can't love you because I'm an android subplot.
It's incredible.
Noted.
It's my favorite subplot of all time.
This is good. This is good.
It's going to be a very long time before we get to that one, unfortunately. But
I won't forget.
I'm very excited.
I won't forget. You can also visit us on our website at wallopingwebsnappers.com and follow Walloping Web Snappers on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Walloping Web Pod, or email us at wallopingwebsnapperspodcast@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe on all podcast platforms, especially for those newer shows. And next week, we conclude our coverage of this season of the 1967 Spider-Man show with an episode called The Evil Sorcerer.
Ooh, he's going to be sorcering evilly. See ya.
See ya.
Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there goes the Spider-Man. In the chill of night, at the scene of a crime, like a streak of light, he arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighbor.
neighborhood Spider-Man. Wealth and fame, he's ignored. Action is his reward to him. Life is a great big bang. Wherever there's a hang, you'll find a spider.